This week on Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we sat down with Mike Park of Asian Man Records, and we drank some malt liquor. It was a good time. We actually talked about drinking malt liquor and were unsuccessful in finding the malt liquor that Mike asked us to find. So there you go. And hey, guys, how are you? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Joe.
Happy Friday.
Who knew that finding malt liquor would be so difficult this day and age?
Yeah, I should say we could have purchased malt liquor. I ended up going at that point with a large bottle of non-malt liquor, but I did go to two stores looking for King Cobras. I did like the lead up to the story, which is just, it was a funny lead up to a story. It wasn't much there, but Mike is a non-sober guest of our podcast, who doesn't like beer. So he did drink a beer for us though.
He drank two beers.
Oh,
at the one point he opened a fresh one in the middle of that episode and also drank that, which I think was great. I really like that he toughed it out for us.
Yeah. I think it was really interesting to talk about ska in its current form. Ska seems to be fairly divisive. This week been following the drama over at Ska or Nah, which is an account that asks more famous accounts if they like ska. This week, Converge, one of my favorite Boston metal hardcore bands, confirmed that they fuck no, don't like ska, which has caused me to rethink so many things.
Why? That should have been obvious.
I know. But at least somebody turned the Jane Doe album cover into the Specials logo of Walt Jabasco, which was absolutely perfect. So there's a follow for you, Ska or Nah. Brian O'Halloran of Clerks fame, ska. He's a ska, yes. Ska positive.
Yeah, did you see that goatee while he was filming that? And for the last 20 years, of course he listens to ska. You don't have that goatee and not listen to ska.
Are you equating ska fandom with goateedom?
I think there's some correlation.
Listen, as a man with a ridiculous piece of facial hair that is not a goatee, I stand in judgment of your judgment, sir.
Prove me wrong.
Dennis, how are you today?
What a segue. I'm great, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like you and I aren't going to be able to talk much about ska either.
No. I was actually really good friends with the ska band right after I graduated high school, the Boston Jolly Pirates from Walpole, Mass.
I know several of those cats.
They were a great ska punk band that I would go to some of their shows and hang out with them. And that's the extent of my knowledge and interest in ska, though.
I can appreciate that it's not everybody's cup of tea or beer, what have you. I get that. I think it was interesting to talk to Mike about parallels that I think I still see in like the carnivalization, as we called it, of craft beer, and like the Hawaiian shirt ridiculousness of third wave ska. The kids nowadays, though, they're bringing some different feelings to it, and I really appreciate that. So
I mean, we had that talk with him the same day that Worst Beer Blog decided to call it quits, which is someone that did such a good job of calling out that sort of carny aspect of beer.
Yeah.
And a lot of those flaws. So
yeah, the training wheels are off. It's on us now to call out that shit as we see it. Either the misogyny or the bullshit or the ridiculous pastry plus your Pilsner.
You start asking the packaging team what they think about things.
No.
That's a good call. That's a good call, Joe.
I think it was at least instructive in some ways to talk to Mike. Mike's a super creative and really kind guy who's been an activist and I really want to paint him as an optimist, though. When I called him that, he was like, I think he just like stopped for a second, almost asked me like, do you follow me online? Cause like, I'm pretty sure I rant about like how bullshit stuff is all the time. And I'm like, but to me, that feels like optimism, that you're saying it and you're using your platform to say it. You know, and I appreciate that. I don't think enough craft breweries do it. And I think people are afraid of repercussions when they like stand up for what they believe in. So I'm appreciative that we talked to somebody who stands up and has stood up for what he believes in for so long.
Yeah, that's cool. One thing I liked from this episode was you guys were talking about how craft breweries will like steal like artists' intellectual property and stuff. You know, they did with WAP. And then not 5 minutes later, you guys were like, we're going to put the Lando Calrissian audio in this podcast. And I was listening to it like, no, we're not going to steal the intellectual property because we don't have the rights to it.
I mean,
that's 40-year-old audio.
The rights are the rights. We don't have the rights to that.
All right. Imagine for a second, Billy D. Williams trying to sell you Cool Colt, mentholated Colt 45.
Yep.
This is the space where you can stop, pause our little podcast, and go look at a video of Billy D selling it to you, or just look at a photo of it. It'll be fine. You can look at that. We won't steal it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We should give a disclaimer hidden here in our introduction that the sound on this is not great, and it's not Dennis's fault. We need to say that Dennis did nothing wrong. We had a kind of a shitty Zoom connection to start, and for whatever reason, we've got a little bit of syncopated clicks. Imagine it as the guitar in the ska band syncopating every time Mike says anything for the first half of this episode.
I was gonna say, there's just some like dust on the record, and you just hear those clicks and pops as it goes by.
Yeah, you just don't get analog, man. That's what it's about.
Yeah, we recorded this to vinyl directly and then put it back on the internet. So just some.
I did what I could, everybody.
You mind those grooves. And we appreciate you for it.
Thanks, guys.
Dennis, what are you drinking tonight? I see you drinking something extremely dark over there.
I am. So I have a stout from Moderation Brewing Company in Brunswick, Maine, called Box Shop Girls. It's a stout with Maine oats. It's really, really good.
What's the strength?
6.5.
I don't think I've ever even heard of that brewery.
Neither have I.
I'm drinking a Post Shift Pilsner, which is a beer that we make. I don't have a good story for it whatsoever. It's just a beer that we make that I really like. So that's why I'm drinking it. And I guess we were drinking lagers with Mike. So I wanted to tune into that energy. So yeah, that's why I'm drinking it. It's this beer that I just drank is better than a Miller High Life from December that I drank in April. Go figure.
Agreed. It's my favorite beer we make. So.
And what beer are you drinking, sir?
I have a Three Floyds Brian Boru. They're Irish Red. One of my favorite things about some of these older breweries that finally make their way into our state is that they make some of these classic styles and get to, you know, when Bell's came in, you get a Bell's Amber, Three Floyds the same, finally get, you know, Gumball Head and this, you know, their spring seasonal. Ah, it's so good. And, you know, I'm drinking it for Dennis because it's just straight up Irish history beer. So
I'd love to try it. I'm sure that, I mean, Irish Red is a really lovely style, and I think it's typified by using some roasted malt in an otherwise like fairly amber focused beer. So you get that little like tinge of malt bitterness, which I think is really lovely in those beers. Are you getting that in that beer? Am I describing it adequately?
Yeah, you're actually describing it pretty much to a T. It's got that sort of caramelly sweetness with like a little roasty in the backbone, you know, not super bitter. The hops they used are minimal, so they've just got a balance to it, but it's by no means hoppy. So I could drink like 10 of these. They're just so good.
Yeah.
Might I recommend that you drink 10 of them before listening to the sound quality of our interview with Mike Park? How about that? That'd be a good place to be like, that clicking, you won't even hear it.
If you can get through the clicking, there are some really good stories there from Mike, who,
yes,
I will agree with Joe, just seems so positive all the time, even though he doesn't like being associated that way.
Yeah. And I mean, he's in a million bands and they're not all ska bands. So I know we basically spent most of the time talking about ska, but he's in just a ridiculous amount of bands. Asian Man Records is still putting out great releases, and they're just They're just somebody you should support. They're good people. All right. Well, enjoy this episode of Our Beer Can Be Your Life with Mike Park of Asian Man Records. Hi, Mike. Matt and I have a couple questions about all the projects you're in, and we've done some research, and the amount of projects that you are related to is really quite impressive. I don't know that we have to list all of them. I mean, you're extremely accomplished musically.
That'll just take up the entire podcast, is us reading off all the bands and music-related things you've done.
Yeah, it's been a lot.
That's true. I mean, I think in reading back, I didn't realize how influential Asian Man Records was for me personally. Just thinking back to, like, you know, we're in our late 30s, and I think we were like the last generation for which like compilations and like mail order like really made a difference. Like we had to find music that way, because like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years after us, kids had internet and the ability to search for stuff. But we grew up scouring liner notes of bands that we like. So for me, it was the Boss Tones to Less Than Jake to Asian Man Records. I'm pretty sure that was the path that got me to your label. And did you guys used to have the little flyer in each CD with like what was out that year?
Yeah, we were really prolific with our catalogs. I wish I had kept them. We probably did like 20 different covers. Catalog covers, and they were probably like 18 by 24, but they folded up into a nice little square.
Did they all have like unique art too?
Did.
Who did the art for those?
This woman named Mia Osaki, who was a longtime employee.
I feel like that should be like an art show now. It's just the covers for the catalogs.
I think so too. I had a chance to like collect them again. I had a bunch of them, and I guess I threw them out because I can't find them now, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess nowadays they're not as useful for folks, but for folks of our vintage, I guess they were like, I mean, we were just the last folks who had to do that, like, that work to find bands that we liked and be like, all right, this band sounds like this band. Then compilations were like a godsend. It was like, all right, for like $6, I can listen to 24 bands and like figure out which of these bands that I love, and then keep expanding it from there.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
I think it creates a world now where we love making mixtapes, or not mixtapes anymore. They're just playlists on Spotify and sharing them back and forth. But I don't know that like anyone can really appreciate, anyone who wasn't there at that time and didn't have the tools that we have now could appreciate how impactful it was to have that stuff at your fingertips. Like, okay, now I can scour this and figure out what my next move is going to be with my extremely limited funds.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it's, if you think about it, it went from like mixtapes to mixed CDRs, and now it's mixed playlists. So it's evolved, but kids are still doing it. They're making playlists and sharing it, so it still exists in a digital format, which I think is pretty cool that it's, that you're still able to make your, put your favorite songs together and give it to that friend.
It is, I guess it's easier than the mixtape thing, like sitting by the stereo and trying to tape the thing and pass it back and forth. It was kind of an endeavor. So like just finding CD, I think for me, Punk-O-Rama was the first one that I like found, and it was like by the counter at some record store when I was a kid, and I was like, this has all the things that I need on it right here in one package.
That's right.
I don't know what the precedent was. I kind of felt like maybe the Plea for Peace compilations were some of the first ones that were like compilations for a cause, like for a purpose. It wasn't just like collections of bands on one label. Right. I'm curious if that was an idea you had, or if it was an idea that like you grew out of something else, or is that something?
Yeah, it all really, a lot of the fundraising or the activism came from me being a fan of Ian MacKaye and Discord Records, and then in the Bay Area, Jello Biafra, and he did a lot of rock against racism stuff. So it was always this like idea that you could do music and also have a message behind it. And so it's just like, okay, what can I do? Let's put out a compilation. And benefit compilations or benefit releases have been happening for decades and decades, as far back as physical format has existed.
Sure.
People have put together stuff for a cause. And it was just an extension of that, but it was an overt mission of mine to make certain releases or to be a 100% charitable, or at least with my music, I was putting like 10% aside for different organizations.
Yeah. When you get to be an artist and be able to like get behind, you know, have people pay money for something that you love making and they know it's going to the right place, is like a very meaningful thing for, you know, personally me, definitely like giving money to somebody that I know is going to put it to good use. It's a great thing to be able to do, to be make enough money to be able to add that contribution. So that's like a very noble thing to do in this society of ours that we've built up.
Yeah. And it's cool to see, there's so many people that are doing good things, and it's, I love this punk community in 2021. A lot of the newer bands, the newer artists who are influential. It's exciting. I'm going to pop a beer. I never drink, but I actually grabbed a beer for this occasion.
Oh, nice. Ooh. What do you got?
It is called Citra Solo IPA.
Fun.
I think, is that Citra Solo IPA? India Pale Ale.
Single malt, or rather single hop beer with Citra, maybe, from the name of it.
6.4% alcohol, brewed and packaged by Lead Dog Brewing Company in Sparks, Nevada.
Cool. Well, cheers, man.
Yeah, cheers.
Thanks for doing that.
Oh, it's horrible. I just don't like beer.
It's okay not to like beer. I think that's totally fine. I think one of the things that, you know, to kind of follow that last point, the in the past year, the Ska Against Racism comp has been, I think, from what I heard you saying earlier this year, you guys had at that point raised over like $80,000 for.
I just checked this past weekend. It was $78,000.
That is awesome.
Which is incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. Give me some of it. Just kidding.
I mean, it is incredible. I think considering the mix of artists on that, I mean, it is a mixture of like folks that I think were maybe old guard when we were coming up, and then folks who are brand new. And I'm curious how that mix of artists came together, because it does seem like a mixture of many generations at once.
Yeah, it was. So we did. It was a collective amongst myself, this record label called Bad Time Records, and this ska, what is it? Social media site called Ska Punk Daily. And the guy who runs Ska Punk Daily is this guy named Phil. And he's the one who did all the legwork of getting the art. He put out a list. He's like, this is who I want to reach out to. Do you have any objections? Would you like to add any? And so myself and the other Mike, we kind of put our 2 cents in, and then he fielded it from there and did a lot of the legwork of just reaching out and reaching back after certain artists did not respond. And then if he really needed help, then he would reach out to me and go, can you get in touch with this band? And I said, certainly. So
use that 20 plus years of goodwill to get this band to respond, please.
Yeah.
That's a 20 plus plus, Matt. I mean, Skank and Pickle is like early 90s.
I wasn't trying, you know, I'm assuming he's what, like 35 years old from looking at him. So, you know, I'm just trying to.
This isn't audio medium. So you definitely look 35 years old. I'm thinking you're looking quite distinguished.
21. I just turned 21. That's why I'm drinking.
Congratulations.
That's why that beer doesn't taste good. You're just not used to it yet.
Yeah, you'll get used to it.
I went to a taqueria in San Francisco with a friend and we thought, let's get a Mexican beer. I can't remember what I got, maybe a Chihuahua. And I was eating my burrito and drinking the beer. I'm like, this is disgusting. I should have just got a Coke. I'm going to try to think of all the horrible beer stories.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We should definitely tell them.
I've been trying to enjoy it, trying to be an adult, but it all comes back to, I just rather have a soda.
You know, I heard once, bitterness is the gateway to adult flavor. And beer is about bitterness in a lot of ways, even shitty beer.
My wife likes a beer. I'll save it for later when we start talking about malt liquor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things I think is interesting, if you look at craft beer right now, and I would imagine from hearing you talk about it, you don't think about craft beer a lot, and that's great. Craft beer is kind of like, I think it's kind of becoming a parody of itself in a lot of ways. People are trying to put as many pastries as you can think of into beers. People are trying to make the haziest, most opaque beer. In a lot of the ways, it feels like late 90s ska. Like you use the, I don't know if this is a real verb. You use the verb carnivalize. Right?
So we've carnivalized craft beer.
Carnivalized craft beer. And, you know, Matt and I work at a brewery that makes, on the one hand, kind of like classic American style or German style lagers in an American light. And then the other side makes more like kind of new school stuff. And I feel like the resurgence in ska right now, and whatever this fourth wave thing is, if you want to call it that, is like, all right, we can bounce back from carnivalizing ourselves. It's not all Hawaiian shirts and like and goofy ass beer names stealing intellectual property from other places. Like we could take a lesson here.
Yeah.
So I think there is a parallel that we could draw and explain. And you know, when you use that word carnivalize, I think you you immediately had like a self-deprecating, like maybe you were a little bit a part of that, but and then you went on with it. But I was listening to Skanking Pickle records this week and I'm like, yo, like in between the goofy stuff, you were like sliding in some social commentary pretty consistently.
And that was the problem, because it was a democracy. The other songwriters would end up writing the goofy stuff. If they let me write all the songs, we would have been the best, but they didn't.
Well, I mean, you guys were named Skank and Pickle. So I feel like a little bit of comedy was okay. Like, you know, there's just a tiny little bit of touch. There's, you know, if you're going to have a punny kind of name, you got to have a little bit of tongue in cheek going.
It's the best name in all of music. There's no better name.
I don't know if you've spent any time looking at the Wikipedia for Skank and Pickle, but there is a Boston connection on your Wikipedia page in which Bradley Noel of Sublime talks to the Boston radio station about and calls you by a different name and then is corrected to say, no, Skank and Pickle is way better than I don't remember what the other band is.
I know exactly what you're talking about though.
I was like, all right, so
I know this little Bradley fact. We brought Sublime, actually, the first time they played Boston, they opened up for us at TT the Bears.
TT the Bears. R.I.P.
Is that still around?
It's not. The room remains, and it's currently called
Sophia.
Sophia or Sonia's.
Sonia, like, yeah, one of those. Yeah. It kind of switched over right before COVID. And then, obviously, I haven't been there since, so.
Sprung Monkey is the answer to that.
Oh, Sprung Monkey.
Sprung Monkey.
I don't know who that is.
I don't either, but.
Here's another beer story real quick.
Yeah, so do it.
Remember. So I was at this kind of hipster bar in the early 90s called the Frolic Room in Hollywood. And the guitarist for the Untouchables, this guy named Clyde Grimes, was in there. And it's kind of just a small little dive bar. And I just had a Budweiser and it tasted really good.
Yeah.
Because it was so cold. It was like almost frozen, but not quite. So that's a good experience. A good beer experience was the Frolic Room, probably 1991, with the most ice cold Budweiser I had ever tasted. And it was blazing hot outside. Maybe I need to give beer another try.
Well, I actually have, I think, three more Budweisers in my fridge because we talked to a Boston legend last week in Lenny Lashley of Darkbuster and Lenny Lashley Gang of One fame. He is a sober man now, but and back in the day wore a lot of Darkbuster paraphernalia, sang the Budweiser paraphernalia, sang the Budweiser theme song. And I can confirm it's still a delicious beer, especially very cold. And if it's very hot, we don't get a lot of very hot in April or March in Boston, but they will probably last around until it's a little hotter. So,
okay.
Those are good beers.
All right.
Yeah. Do you have any Boston connection? I mean, you have a Portland, Maine connection through, your in-laws.
My only Boston connection is that I released the first Big D and the Kids Table record.
That's true. That's true. Good luck.
Speaking of Boston legends.
That's right. Dave exists in some capacity now. I don't know. I think there is actually a Big D record coming out this year. I don't know.
Okay.
What status that is, but those guys, the last Hometown Throwdown, they played an all covers set, which was interesting. It was all Scott. I think mostly Scott covers.
Nice. I saw them play 3 years ago and I didn't recognize one person except for Dave. I'm like, I don't know who any of these guys are. But Dave is here, and that's it. From the Good Luck record, he was the only guy out of the 11 people on Good Luck. Yeah. Dave is the last soldier standing.
Yeah, good luck. And there was like a split CD before that.
Drexel, was it?
Drexel, yeah, with
Drexel. Right. Yeah.
Those are, I think, very formative for me because, you know, I'm from the same place as that, and they were singing about places that I knew. And but Dave is also like, he's a dude who doesn't, he just looks young. I think he's always looked very similarly. I don't know. He just has like a youthful edge to him, even in his current state, which is not as youthful as he once was, obviously, but he's got a lot of energy for that.
Yeah, he's great. He's a good guy.
Yeah, we tried to do a beer with him a few years ago, right around Throwdown time, but it just didn't quite sort out. But we'll probably try to do something with him in the future. It was fun.
He you gave him a chance. That's it. One strike, he's out.
Well, that's how. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's right. We're gonna make the Mike Park beer. We're gonna find the perfect beer for an Asian Man Records beer release. I'm into it. We are making a beer with Jeff Rosenstock, actually, who's looks Ooh. Like he's playing on your new EP that's coming out in May.
He's an official member since 2014.
Yeah, so he's on the last two releases, Bruce Lee Records. Sorry.
Last three releases.
Nice.
He produced, wrote a couple songs. He's awesome. I will drink that beer. I will shotgun that beer and I will beer bong it on video. Ooh,
if you guys come to Boston to play a show, we are going to hold you to that.
Yeah. Is that going to happen? Are you going to take Bruce Lee Band on the road?
No.
No.
Too bad. No.
And we can't even get like two shows over the weekend.
Now, if I did something, I would fly out and probably play like New York City and Philadelphia or something. If I ever make it to the East Coast again.
Diss in Boston while we're on the call.
I'm old. I'm 21 now.
Yeah, you can't be testing that. 21 is enough. I'm loving the new single, Division in the Heartland. Is that's an EP that's coming out?
Yeah. So we the drummer who plays in the Jeff Rosenstock band, he's from San Jose. And I knew he was gonna come home for Thanksgiving. So I was like, okay, that's three of us. I just need to get Jeff. He lives in LA now. I'm like, hey, let's just record an EP. So it worked perfectly. It was awesome. We did 3 days and we were able to record five songs. And I think they're really good. Has anyone ever said, like, I think they're really bad?
terrible, but you should buy it.
This is terrible, but I have a deadline, so we're just throwing them out there.
I remember seeing Robert De Niro doing press for Rocky and Bullwinkle. I think he played Boris. And he was just like so miserable in these interviews. He's like, yeah, it's a great movie, go see it. I was like, yes. Yes, De Niro.
Yeah, he already got the money. He signed a thing that said he would show up for this. Yeah.
Raging Bull to Rocky and Bullwinkle. I love it.
I feel like that's like the things you do for your children. Like, you're like, I'll be in the Rocky and Bullwinkle thing. My kids will love it. And then you're like, no, oh, they don't even give a shit.
Those kids are probably in their 40s now. Okay, I got another beer story is touring in Germany, I think in Bavaria. I think the drinking age is 18. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I mean, it can be as low as 17, but so a lot of kids at the shows just get inebriated. And the thing there is they just mix their, it's like, so it'd be like Coca-Cola and Hefeweizen. So it'd be like Cola Weizen or sure. Like a banana cream juice. So banana Weizen or whatever, mango Weizen. So it's just basically kids just drinking sugary alcohol drinks, getting obliterated. But I had a Cola Weizen and I was like, oh, this is great. Just a huge, not even a pint glass, maybe like three times the size of a pint glass.
Like the liter steins.
Yeah. And just Cola Weizen just tasted like sugary goodness.
That feels like it'd be the worst hangover ever, is getting like obliterated on a cola beer mix.
You have to drink a lot of those to get obliterated, I think, and that would probably mean
yeah, but I'm pretty like if I'm 17, I could probably drink a lot of it. I mean, we used to drink like 2 liters of Mountain Dew while playing basketball, so throw a little booze in there. Let's,
you know, when I went to get the to be named malt liquor that I will open in a few minutes today, they had a German cider mixed with cola that I've seen a couple of years ago, because when I worked for a wholesaler, they were like pitching to come to the US and they're like, it's called Bemble with Care. That's the name of the company.
Mm.
And it's like cola cider. It was like Apfel cola. And it's like literally a 1-to-1 mix of like hard cider and like cola. And I'm like, whoa. I took a sip, but I was like, I don't understand who this is for, why this exists, or like what. But you know, I would imagine somewhere else kids drinking it makes sense. If you're trying to get kids to like accustomed to drinking, but you don't want to give them like something that's like full strength, you give them like a half strength, something like that, that's like a lot of liquid, but you'd be hard pressed to like, you know, get super hammered on it. That makes a lot of sense for that. And that's probably a smarter way to get kids accustomed to alcohol than telling them they can't have it till they're 21, and then they can have whatever they want and as much of it as they can afford.
You got to get them hooked early, you know, whatever you got to, whatever it takes, man.
That's why all these craft beer cans are also shiny and have like cartoon imagery on them now and stuff.
Yeah. It's the Hawaiian shirt of the craft beer, man. I'm saying it's Real Big Fish's fourth record.
Is this can, would you consider this like carnival-y?
I don't know. I think, for me, it's not just the look. It's also the, like, does that brewery make that beer consistently? Is that like a flagship beer for them? Are they making a new beer every week? I don't know. It's a, there are other things going on too, where breweries will just like straight up steal intellectual property from artists. Like this came up recently where someone just took Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B WAP and just like threw it on a can. And it was like Wet Ass Pilsner. And like, it was just like two black women's faces on a can. I'm like, you can't do this. That's not, you didn't do anything here. You just stole from these artists. You threw it on a can and you're like, look.
And but obviously they can, because they did it.
They did. Yeah. You get a cease and desist and you're like, okay, we're never going to make that again. So never mind. And now everyone knows whatever that brewery's name is, which we won't mention here because I don't know the name of it.
It clearly didn't work very well. Neither of us can remember who made that beer.
No. And it doesn't matter. Yeah. Oh, I had a salient question about yes. So you have all these projects that you're involved in, like and they all seem to be to have you as a primary songwriter. And they all seem to be different musical styles. And I'm wondering what musical styles you haven't explored that you still want to, or what is something that is on the list for you?
Maybe hip-hop.
Yeah,
I'd like to maybe try to do some hip-hop stuff.
because a lot of my songs, like, I do these rapid lyrics that are kind of like basically rapping. Even in that new song, Division in the Heartland, it's basically rap. So I wonder if I can, if I had a producer who was able to like really create some cool beats, maybe I can rap. Who knows?
So when you,
I mean, I'll listen to it.
I would probably listen to it as well. When you go to write a song, do you like have a riff and then you think in your brain, like, this would work for this band? Or do you just sit down with the mindset of like, I want to write a, you know, Bruce Lee band song today, or like, because you write a lot of songs.
Yeah, I usually write for the project. So if it's a Bruce Lee band song, then I know what style I'm going to do. If it's for Oogie Kuba Station, I know what style it's going to be. Or Kitty Cat Fan Club. I'm writing for different singers in those bands.
I wasn't sure if just you were like listening to, you know, like a lot of Superchunk and you were like, oh, this is going to be a Kitty Cat song, like in my brain, just because I got that style going. Like,
yeah, I think I guess in some instances when I'm just kind of writing and I don't have an intended band for it, I guess based on what it turns out to be, then I could decide like, oh, this is perfect for this. Nice. And I've had it where it's not appropriate for any of the bands, and I will just try to think of people who could sing it and maybe like push it to them. I'm just always writing. I feel like if get me a good 40 ounce of malt liquor, stick me in a dark room for 24 hours, I could come up with a pretty decent record.
Are you writing on guitar?
Guitar.
Did you start in guitar or saxophone?
Saxophone.
Nice. Did you play, was it tenor for you to start, or?
Alto. I think every kid starts on alto.
Yeah.
Fifth grade, sixth grade, and then I think seventh grade. Oh, I did play alto in seventh grade. And in eighth grade, I played Barry.
Oh, me too. That's funny.
Yeah, I jumped to Barry, and then it was so much easier because the alto parts, you're playing a lot of like a lot of notes.
Sure.
And on Barry, you're just playing like
a lot of whole notes on Barry.
A lot of the bass parts. So I was like, oh, this is way easier. And the teacher liked me. So
I don't know how it was for you. For us, it was like, so I similarly started on alto saxophone and then got Barry because they're like, you're big, you can hold a Barry, you're gonna be baritone.
Oh, nice.
That was as much as thought as went into it. It's like, this is a bigger person, you take it. Okay.
Yeah, it was the school's Barry too. And I brought it home and I put it in the bathtub. I thought, I didn't know. I was only in eighth grade. I was trying to clean it. And then I ruined the entire Barry, which is probably like a $3,000 horn.
Well, you live and learn, I guess.
The school lives and learns. Don't let him take anything home.
The teacher was not happy.
Those are really impressive instruments. Did you ever play any of those? Any Barry on any of your releases, or is it all?
No.
All tenor and all
tenor. All tenor.
No, yeah. Morphine covers you could slip those into?
No. Would you play Barry and tenor at the same time? Were those just two horns?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Dana. Yeah.
Was Morphine from Boston? Were they a Boston band? Okay.
That's true. Actually, where the Middle East is, which is the same block as TT, is now Mark Sandman Square.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's cool. This is my malt liquor substitute. It is the champagne of beers. It was $2 and it was a 750 milliliter champagne bottle of Miller High Life. I was like, this has got to happen. This is too much fun.
But the alcohol content is...
It's less. Not
enough.
No, but I started this with an Orval, which is almost exactly the same ABV as malt liquor. It just happens to be a Trappist Belgian beer made by monks. So, you know,
just put a shot of Aperol in that High Life.
Don't worry about that.
So if you guys were out, obviously you're not asking for like ye olde English, but if you were at a party and that's all they had, would you be perfectly content with drinking it?
Yeah. I would like to say that we are, we enjoy beer and we enjoy beer for any situation. So we don't look down on stuff that isn't craft beer. Malt liquor is fine. My biggest issue with malt liquor this year has been that's 40 ounces of liquid and it's a lot of liquid to drink by myself. So
it is.
And my partner is not going to be as much about sharing a King Cobra with me if I could find one. But I am curious to know why King Cobra holds a special place in your heart.
So when I was young, when I would go out
recently,
yes.
Yes.
I would,
because you just turned 21. I want to make sure the audience remembers that, just setting that standard.
Just turned 21. And when I don't drink often, but when I do, I would drink strictly to get drunk. And the perfect beverage was a 40 ounce of King Cobra, usually very cheap, maybe a couple bucks at the most. And it would just get me to the point of just drunk, but not, I knew I wasn't going to throw up. It was just the perfect drunkenness, and I could just function without being an asshole, without completely embarrassing myself, but at the same time being obliterated.
It's interesting, the science behind just having a 40 of King Cobra that gets you to exactly where you want to go.
Yeah, it was perfect. And I think 2 years ago, I went to punk rock bowling with a friend, and I tried to do it again. I drank the 40 ounce of King Cobra, and I did not feel good.
No,
I was hurting. I was like, oh, this is no good.
You were an older 21 2 years ago, and it was just harder to handle.
Well, it's funny though, because you know the malt liquor, you know, reputation is such that of like binge drinking. And you know, when I was going to stores today looking for King Cobra, there's a certain subset of older white dudes who were also beelining for this section of the store because it's the middle of the day and this is their cooler door and it's not usually my cooler door. And they're like, excuse me. I'm like, sorry about that. I'm just shopping around this area. And I'm looking at the malt liquors. I'm like, these are all 5 or 6%. Craft beers are rocking out 8, 9, 10% now. So
wow, craft
beer is the new malt liquor.
What malt liquors did they have?
They had Steel Reserve.
Oh, it's a good one.
That is a good one. I remember that they have the back printed labels. Not only is the label printed on the front, they print on the back of that label. So there's like little stuff you can see behind the label on that point. They had Old English, which has been venerated by folks. I think such as Sublime, wasn't there's like a Sublime. Well, there's 40 ounces of freedom. I think that was like an Old English label.
Did they have Crazy Horse?
Did not have Crazy Horse. No.
I have never even heard of Crazy Horse.
Is that a West Coast thing? Are we gonna learn something?
I don't know, but the design was amazing. There's a band from Hawaii that made a parody shirt of the Crazy Horse logo.
That's got to be a West Coast thing. The big one that I know I grew up with was Mickey's. You guys have Mickey's out there?
Definitely. Big Mouth.
Yep.
Now, Big Mouth with the little picture.
It's got the B on it.
Heck yeah. Schlitz Malt Liquor is the most famous, I would think, with Lando Calrissian as their spokesperson for a good decade in the 70s. I don't know if you ever saw the commercials. You probably are too young.
No, I'm familiar, but I think that's Colt 45. I think
is it Colt 45?
Yeah. I mean, Schlitz is another famous one, of course, but...
Can someone look it up real quick?
Sure. Billy D. Williams.
Billy D. Williams Malt Liquor.
Billy D. Williams Malt Liquor, you got it. I think that's important for this beer podcast. We should...
I think it's... Did you say it's
Colt 45.
It is Colt 45? Gosh darn it.
It works every time is the tagline.
Yep.
Oh.
The picture of him with a beautiful woman on his shoulder.
Can you add audio to the podcast? Can you put a little clip of the one of the commercials?
Sure.
Well, we will add that in.
Yeah, we can add that in.
Thank God.
We should ask you if we can use a clip of Bruce Lee Band in this, if that's okay.
Absolutely not. You guys are crazy.
Got it. The royalties.
Of course you can.
I know you're not going to answer this question today because it's April 1st, but I mean, Ska Dream. I mean, it's one thing if Jeff posts it on his thing, but then Asian Man Records posts Ska Dream cover. And I'm like, it could be real.
I don't know. Who knows? We're going to find out eventually. It's either going to just be forgotten or something magical will happen. We're going to find out. Ska Dream.
I know that wasn't really a question, but for those in the know, they will understand the reference here.
Yeah,
Jeff Rosenstock's No Dream is a great record, and you should buy it. What other?
I'm interested. Yeah,
see what happens. I'm also interested. I'm curious what bands you think people should be paying attention to or paying more attention to than they're not. as somebody who curates a lot of music for a lot of people.
Yeah. Let me try to think of any like super duper amazing bands coming up. God, I hate like plugging the bands on my label, but
do it.
There's a reason why I'm putting out these records. There's a band called Small Crush. It's like indie rock quartet from the East Bay, Oakland, California area. The singer is a young singer-songwriter, and she, when I first met her, she told me that I had slept over her grandparents' house when I was younger. And I said, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh, well, my dad is Jason Hammond. He was in Dance Hall Crashers. And I was like, oh my God, such a small world. I love that.
You're spanning generations, man. That's,
yeah.
That's excellent.
But they are so good. She is so talented. It's crazy. And a more punkier band from the East Bay called Grumpster. Sure. A three piece. It just sounds like old Lookout Records, like something you would get in the mid 90s. They would just fit perfectly in that Lookout Records catalog. And then we have a new band called the Moore Family Band. It's three siblings, two brothers, one sister, and they were created during the pandemic because they were stuck at home. They just started writing music together. And I knew the oldest sibling, Randy, and they just put out a great record of like pop punk, like meets Weezer. It was just strong vocals.
Yeah, pretty. That girl has got a powerful voice.
Yeah, she's only 19. She's just a little kid. But
that's only a couple years younger than you.
Yeah,
I know.
That's some, I listened to some of that while just like cruising through Spotify bands that are on there. I was like, oh, this shit is good. She's got pipes.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, they've never even played a show, so it's exciting to see what will happen when things open up and they're able to actually play shows. You know, they might suck, who knows, but I'm hoping it's good.
Is there a band whose record you put out that didn't sell, but you think should have, that like you just don't understand how it didn't catch on?
Oh, there's so many. Dog Breath. There's this band called Dog Breath from Phoenix. Really good. Just like this twee pop, indie pop stuff. And I just don't understand why it doesn't sell. Recently, he had someone posted something on TikTok that went viral. So he's been able to get a little bit of a love there, but it hasn't translated in physical sales. Like, we sold so few records, it was insane. And they've gone on tour with Waxahachie. They've toured with AJJ. So they've had opportunities and I just can't figure it out. So is life.
I'm curious about, like, I was sent today this stupid meme by a bunch of people about CDC warning of the fourth wave of ska, because I love ska. And I'm sure you got that today. If I got it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I posted it. I posted it on my Twitter.
I got a lot of direct messages with that today. I feel like the wave of ska, the young kids, like I'm thinking of the Bad Operation record, which I think was partially out through Mike at Bad Time Records and Community Records. Like, what these kids are doing with the genre to me speaks more like the stuff that, I don't know, I saw on the Dance Craze YouTube rip that somebody has up, like that, speaking soulfully and speaking back to the origins of the music. And that to me comes back to like what craft beer could learn about from ska. So I'm curious what you think, like, what are these, this new generation, what are they getting right? And you know,
they're getting everything right.
What can we learn?
They're getting everything right because it's all community based. Everyone, there's no competition. Everyone is rooting for each other, especially the Bad Time Records scene. That scene is awesome. What Mike is doing over there with his band, Kill Lincoln, and of course the label. And that band, Catbite, that's my favorite band out of all the new bands. Catbite is so good. Philadelphia band.
Yeah, wasn't there a story where like one of them found some other band's van recently, like was riding around
Philadelphia on
a bike, and then like some band had their van stolen, and the like one of the players in Catbite like found it.
Yeah.
Cycling by it. Like, these guys are superheroes.
That's right. Gosh, I can't. I read that somewhere, but I can't remember the band that had their van stolen.
They're great. They're on Sky Against Racism too, right?
Yes,
I think they are. Yeah.
Yeah. I did. I wrote a song last year that the singer of Cap I we duetted. It's just under my name, and yeah, good pipes.
Yeah,
she has good pipes.
It seems like they're not. I don't know. They grew up listening to the same stuff that I think I did, but it's not. I don't know. We watched that era kind of like turn into the Hawaiian shirt thing. And then like they are coming out of that with a whole different perspective. So I don't know. I'm excited to see that, because I think craft beer is not the only industry that is in danger of falling in on itself and just taking itself way too goofily. And I don't think it needs to take itself seriously either. These bands are not like uber serious, but all the time. But they're,
and there's nothing wrong with being silly. There's nothing wrong with being Real Big Fish. I feel like Real Big Fish gets shit on a lot, but man, they're the only band, them and Less Than Jake. I'm trying to think if there are any other bands that toured nonstop. They never took a break from the 90s to 2021. They have never stopped. When it was like dead in the water, they were the ones that kept touring and at least kept it alive to some degree. So they should be really like put on a pedestal.
For us in Boston, the Bostones occupy something like that, but they weren't touring that entire time. They just came back and played one show a year, you know? So we would go to that one show a year.
They're probably like, we can just do these hometown throwdown shows and make as much money in this one weekend as we could.
Yeah.
Touring the whole year.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I think, you know, as part of preparing for this, I read about your thoughts on Bad Manners off the Dance Craze movie. So I was watching that Bad Manners performance on Dance Craze and realized that band is still together.
It's just the singer. Well,
I mean, do you need anyone else besides that guy? That guy looks, I mean, I've not seen that band. It's, I think you guys, you said you opened for them, right?
I played in the band. So
in
the band. So in 1992, or it might've been 91. We had opened up for them in like 1990, and he really liked our energy. And so he hired just our bass player to go on tour with him. So he brought an entire band from England plus our bass player. And then like a couple of weeks into the tour, I guess he wasn't happy with the live energy of the band on stage. And so our bass player had said, you should get our horn players. They'll rack, you know, bring it up a notch. And so one of us was not able to go. So two of us went and joined up in Calgary, Alberta, and got to tour for like three more weeks. It was awesome. So much fun. Didn't get paid anything, but it was awesome.
Classic paid with experience.
Yeah. I think I got like $30 a day, which is plenty. I was so happy because this was like one of my favorite bands. Suddenly I was able to be on stage with them every night and just dance and have a good time. It was a great experience, and he taught me a lot. He's such a good front man. It was an airport shuttle van, that type of vehicle. And I sat in the back seat with him. He would just tell me stories. And so I learned a lot from him.
That's awesome. I mean, it's also awesome to be able to interact with a hero and have them not disappoint you. You know, that's I'm sure a valuable moment to share with someone.
100%. 100%. He's a good dude. His voice is kind of shot though. Last time I saw them, he couldn't hit the notes as well as he used to be able to, but still, this is such a good front man.
But does the band bring energy? Because that's all that matters to him.
I mean, they do, but it just looks weird because they're all like young kids. I'm like, who the hell are these people? It doesn't make sense. If you're an older band, you can't hire kids. You got to hire older guys. So it looks like, at least it looks like a real band. It's like the Scottalites, who have no original members right now. And there's all these young cats in there. And I'm like, what is going on? This is just a cover band.
Yeah.
Is that like a MF Doom situation? Like they just wear masks at this point? Like they just like dress up like the other Scottalites people and pretend that they are who they were?
That would be more appropriate if you were a masked band and you can play forever. No one would know.
That's those surf rock bands. They've really got it made, all dressing, you know, either in a bandana or a Mexican wrestling mask. Just go on forever.
They're smart.
I guess I'm kind of curious about, you know, tying back to something we talked about really early, right? Like, I feel, and because I follow you on social media and I follow Asian Man Records, I feel a font of positivity coming out of Mike Park from the East Coast, which I have to say, I really appreciate. But, you know, that's in the face of a lot of trying times. And like, how do you keep that positivity top of mind? What is your strategy?
I mean, do I really keep a positive outlook? I think I have a lot of anger issues too on social media. I'll come out with like rants of just hatred.
Well,
which I always regret after the fact.
That's what social media is for. I mean, that's not real life.
I don't know. I still get the vibe. Like I get the vibe, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, this is the mistake you make with somebody where you're like, you feel like you know somebody because you follow them for a while, but you're like, I can tell that you're like venting or unloading on some of those things, but it's never from a place of hate. It's from, you know, I see what I perceive to be an honest, optimistic person trying to deal with a world that is not always compatible with optimism. So
sure.
Yeah,
I think I use it a lot for therapy almost. It's kind of like getting things off my chest. And a lot of it's late at night. I find myself like tweeting late at night, just randomness. And just like dropping the F-bomb for no apparent reason with nothing to back it up. There's no like explanation why I'm angry. I don't like doing that, but I guess that's just reality at this point for me. But yeah, I try to be positive. I want people to like go, okay, this is inspirational. I can, it helps me. And I've always wanted to do that, but sometimes I got to watch out for myself too.
Going back to you saying, you know, no one wants to deal with a dick. Like you got to be positive. You're running a label with the people that, you know, you want to put out music from people you like, and I'm sure you want them to like you for being the guy that's putting out their music. So there's can't be a lot of dickishness in there. And at the end of the day,
no, even if like you're a band and you are making me thousands and thousands of dollars, if you're a dick, I don't want to work with you. I will trade a good person who sells no records over a highly popular dick.
Well, that's fair. I appreciate that. I mean, and I have to say that I think you're underselling the optimism. I think like from the activism over the years, I mean, I was looking back and thinking about it, and like I grew up in a affluent, mostly white suburb of Boston, and I never felt like I fed into this jock town, and punk rock was kind of the outlet for me, and where I found myself feeling more like I fit in. But like I look back in some of the stuff you were saying and some of those early records and some of the records you put out, I'm like, man, there was like seeds of activism that I picked up when I was really young that now as an adult that I recognize is like, oh, this was like, these are people trying to say something real. And I don't know that I was ready to hear it when I was young, and I don't know that I internalized it the right way. And it was in between some goofy shit, as we talked about.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It was mixed in. But I have to say, I appreciate it. And I think it's, I don't know, I want to encourage you to keep at it and keep speaking your mind. And I imagine it's not always easy to do.
No, it's not. But, you know, it's something I feel that is important. I feel that I do have a small voice out there that I, or a platform to share my ideas. And I feel like I have good ideas that only want to unify, kind of like the idea of like equality. So that's always going to be pushed to the forefront. But I also like to be goofy, and so I like to push that. But on sad days, it's hard to be goofy. So that's when I let it out.
Yes. I mean, that's basically a model for living right there. Just be goofy and be optimistic. And, you know, we all have bad days.
Exactly.
Well, I'm drinking Miller High Life out of a Belgian beer chalice right now. I'm drinking that to Mike Park. I appreciate you spending time with us today. I'm sure you've got a lot of other people to discuss, I don't know, press stuff with. We're just like a beer podcast. So we like talking to people that we like and who also create. So we appreciate you spending the time with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Next time I see you, King Cobra, I'm going to buy it.
Heck yeah.
And I'm going to drink it. And I'm going to send you an email with how I feel the next day. I'm going to just wait until I feel that way. And I'm just going to give you the full synopsis of how I feel. And that'll be how we toast you. And I'll let you know if it still does the job.
If I see you come into Philly and New York, but don't come to Boston, we are going to be pretty angry.
We're just going to see him in Philly or New York. We're just going to go to.
Yeah, it's true. But I'm lazy. I would like to be able to go the shorter distance. In all seriousness, that newest, I've listened to the new single, but Revolt Eviction, Rental Eviction. Sorry. That record is awesome.
Thank you.
It's funny. Like, you know, I've gotten older. Like, I grew up on the Skank and Pickle stuff. And now as an old person, I'm like, oh, this is a little... This is really hitting my groove here. Like, it's so freaking good.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Now we can't wait for the next one, man. Is it on
May 28th. Yeah.
May 28th. Rent Division in the Heartland. Get it now, kids.
Get it now.
That's right. Well, don't get it now. Get it in the future.
Get it in the future now.
Future now. Buy it now and then get it later.
Heck yeah.
Thanks for talking to us, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Appreciate you, man. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fun.
That actually was really fun.
That was an easy one. He's a pleasant human being.
Please, Mr. Honolay, would you tell me what to do? Please, Mr. Honolay, I don't know what to do. Alice hurt her back. Brother Greg almost drowned on a surfboard. A spider almost killed Peter. A wild decoration almost killed me. Tiki, it is evil. I don't know what to do, so please, Mr. Honolay, I don't know what to do. Mr. Honolay, we found this evil tiki, and it's bringing us bad luck. Could you please help us? When I was young, my father, he told me of an ancient burial ground. He said to never go, I never go. But please, Mr. Honolay, you're our only hope. Then I will tell you. So we went far away. The bus driver said that we were crazy, and we went towards a cave, leaving my popcorn as a trail to safety. And I like my popcorn, I like my popcorn. And we met Vincent Price, his tiki name Oscar, and we have one man to thank. We have one man to thank. One man to thank, Mr. Honolay, Mr. Honolay, Mr. Honolay, Mr. Honolay.